Let's get started. And I just get super excited when that happens.
Guys, there's someone that has two devices going, so there's a little bit of an echo when people speak.
Yes, I just muted that person. Oh, awesome. Thank you so much, Hobie. Yeah, that's no problem. So I'll just ask you to unmute once I finish. But, you know, I don't know if you see the participants, but I love seeing when the count comes up because I know that there's a lot of wonderful people coming in to this great webinar. So thank you, everybody, for being here. I know we started a little bit late, but fortunately, we're going on longer than usual because we have an extra special webinar today. Thank you, everyone, again, for being here. Welcome to another one of the New York Public Library's Business Center sessions. Today, we have the last of our four sessions for the Bizability series, where we have been highlighting the wonderful richness that there exists between disability and entrepreneurship and business and how wonderful and how much better the world can be when we highlight them, when we change that narrative. All right, so before we get started, what I am going to do is read you a little blurb that our legal department asks us to read you, but you can time me. I will go super fast. All right. The library uses Zoom for this program and does not own Zoom. Zoom has its own privacy policy that you can read on its own page. Zoom also has closed captions if you need them. Simply click on the CC button on your screen. And the CC button you can find wherever you have the controls on your screen, whether it's up, down, or if you're using a smart device like a phone or an iPad, wherever those controls are, that's where you'll find them. And then to understand how you and the library use Zoom, please go ahead and read the library's privacy policy, especially the section that refers to third-party library service providers. Also, a friendly reminder that at the library programs, everyone is welcome and respected. And also a reminder that if you'd like to hear more about the programs that we have coming up, we have some awesome programs coming up that I will tell you at the end of this session so that we can get started now. All you need to do is sign up for the Business Library's weekly email at the link that the team is posting right now on the chat. So without further ado, let me go ahead and introduce our wonderful host and moderator for today. She is Elaine Profeld, who is an independent journalist and speaker who specializes in entrepreneurship and careers. You may know her from such wonderful books as The Million Dollar One Person Business and Tiny Business Big Money, because she looks at how entrepreneurs are scaling to 1 million and beyond in revenue prior to hiring employees. And I know that a lot of you in here are entrepreneurs or freelancers or solopreneurs, whatever you call yourselves, and are looking at getting to that seven-figure mark. Well, you are in the right place with one of Elaine's books, and we're so lucky to have her here today. So Elaine, without further ado, please, you know, the mic and the floor are all yours. Thank you. Thank you for being here. I'll let you now continue with the program. Take it away.
Thank you so much, Helena, and thank you so much and to the New York Public Library for hosting. I am always so thrilled to be part of anything at the New York Public Library because you really get entrepreneurship and the spirit that drives so many of the businesses that we've talked about on these panels, and just your energy and love of your personal love of entrepreneurship just shine through every time. I'm so excited to be part of this panel. We all became fast friends during the pre-call, and I felt like I could spend the whole evening talking to these panelists, and I think that the attendees are going to feel the same. These are folks who embody all the energy of entrepreneurship that's going on in this country and the world right now. There were 5 million new businesses started in the United States last year, and they're being started in record numbers. And there's a reason. I think people in the pandemic really thought a lot about what is important to them, and they wanted to go after their dreams. And I think after you listen to this panel, if you haven't started going after your dreams, you will want to, because everyone on this panel is so inspiring. I'm going to give you a very brief introduction to each person. and then ask each of the panelists to tell us more about them in maybe 3 to 5 minutes before we really dive into the questions. They have such great stories, and I'm doing a series on Forbes about all of them, so you can read more on Forbes, but they'll tell you a lot today. So we have Kathy McShane. I'll introduce each, and then you'll each have a couple of minutes to talk about what you do. She is an entrepreneur and senior SBA advisor. She's been involved in a cause near and dear to my heart, which is women entrepreneurs. She ran the U.S. government's Office of Women's Business Ownership, which is a really important position. And then we have Gustavo Serafini, who founded Pure Audio Video with his brother. And he's a podcast host too. A lot of fun to talk to. He runs the Enabled Disabled podcast. And Hobie Wedler, who runs SensePoint Design. This is a panel, obviously, about entrepreneurship and disabilities. And we're going to learn a lot about what's going on currently in this area and all the different ways that people are getting involved with entrepreneurship, no matter what their situation, and turning it into an advantage. So I would like to ask Kathy to tell us a little bit about your journey and what you're doing now, and then we'll go to Gustavo and Hobie. I did it alphabetically, in case you're wondering.
Kathy, you're muted.
There, thank you for keeping me in line here, Hobie. Well, first of all, entrepreneurship is one of my absolute passions. And I've been fortunate enough to really be able to live my dream. I am an immigrant, and to be able to come to this country as a disabled person and go after what I wanted is really quite amazing. And I really do encourage all of you out there, if you have a dream, go for it. Because you know that expression, you can't get to second with your foot on first. You'll always regret what you didn't try to do. So I strongly encourage that. My career started in the corporate world. And then in product development, I came up with new product ideas. And then I had my first child, which was frankly the most perfect product I had ever created. And I very much wanted to be a part of his life. And so I took the plunge and I started my own business. And my own business I created with my values in mind. And my first business was really around hiring people who had disabilities and, believe it or not, women, because I find that disabled people, particularly women who also have families that they have to deal with, it's a really tough road for them. And I started something called Job Sharing, which was one of the first in the country. And everybody told me I was going to fail. And you know what? I just didn't want to believe that. I just knew it would be good for my employees, frankly, really good for my clients, and really, really good for me. So I took that plunge. And I started a company that grew substantially. It ended up being a $6 million company. And then after that, I started a company called Ladies Launch Club, which helped women to either create a business or grow a business. And then most recently, I was asked by the government to go and run the SBA's Office of Women's Business Ownership, where we worked with underprivileged women who really wanted to be empowered. And we know that entrepreneurship does empower people. So that's a brief synopsis of who I am.
Thank you so much, Kathy. And Gustavo.
Sure. So interestingly enough, my journey started in a similar manner to Kathy's. I was born with multiple physical disabilities in Brazil. And my parents moved to the United States when I was 2 years old. And I think there was an interesting process to see them develop in their careers. They both became entrepreneurs eventually and became very successful at what they did. And so I learned a lot about the sacrifice and dedication it takes to run a business, to pursue your dream, to try to improve your life, and to kind of keep pushing yourself just beyond your comfort zone. And so my entrepreneurial journey, I think, came to, it was about discovering who I wanted to be and the difference that I wanted to make in the world. And finally realizing that it was worth the price of admission. Choosing yourself is worth the price of admission after, you know, not having a great experience in graduate school or law school. It was like, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to find my team. I'm going to find my people. And my brother and I launched Pure Audio Video. We've been there for 16 years now, and it's been an incredible journey. The podcast was a way to, I think, expand my reach and connection and to help amplify other people's stories about whatever it is that they're working on that had meaning for them. So that's a little bit about myself.
And before we move on, I wanted to ask you what you meant about choosing yourself. We talked about it a little bit offline, but it's a really important theme, I think, for today.
So choosing myself was a process. It wasn't a linear experience, but it was a process of understanding that if I wanted to do something that mattered to me, I had to choose to believe in myself and to take the risk and to move forward. Like Kathy said, you can't get to second base without getting your foot off first. So whether it was a small step forward or it was a big step forward, it was deciding this means enough, this matters enough, where I need to, or I want to go down this path and put my feet in the fire, even if it's difficult, even if it's challenging, it means that much to me that I want to do it.
Well, that's motivating me. Hobie's a guy who, his motto is, he hasn't put it this way, but I would say it's bring it on. And Hobie, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the work that you do right now. You've had such an interesting history as well.
Well, first of all, thank you for that tagline. I might have to start using that. And just want to say it's an absolute humbling honor to be here with you all. I'm very flattered to share this space with you all. And I do need to first start out by saying that it's all because of Gustavo and his podcast that I met this group and that we've had this amazing opportunity to come together as entrepreneurs with disabilities and talk about this very important topic. So I was born completely blind. And for me, it's all about, when you have a disability in this world, it's all about figuring out ways to solve problems, to live a wonderful and fulfilling life. And entrepreneurship is also about solving problems. So I was born in a fairly small town, but my parents have always just pushed me forward and never had low expectations and really never lowered the bar. And I think that's one thing that we need to address today is expectation levels and making sure that expectations are as high as possible with anyone we interact with, whether they're disabled or not. But I think it's something, low expectations are something that holds the disability community back maybe a little more often than it should. Long story short, I went to graduate school and earned a PhD in organic chemistry, thinking that I wanted to teach chemistry. And while in graduate school, I truly found entrepreneurship and realized just how happy I could be with building my own business, building my own teams, and really stepping outside the box and doing my own thing. With that said, in 2016, when I finished graduate school, I partnered in business with my longtime childhood friend, Justin Blandingham, and started my food and beverage product consulting company, where we do all sorts of product development in food and beverage from a sensory perspective. I have a very good palate that I've developed over the years and use that in the industry from a sensory perspective. I also use my chemistry knowledge to do a lot of reformulation to save my clients time and money and create products that are even better than they thought possible. I along those same lines, have an experience called Tasting in the Dark, which is a truly blind wine experience. And I'm one of those weird scientists who likes marketing. So I started SensePoint Design with Justin and another business partner, Jody Tucker, which is a creative and marketing agency. I think we're the only blind-owned creative and marketing agency in the world, from what I can tell. But the sky's the limit. I believe in taking things and challenging ourselves to the fullest and living the life that we love. And, you know, find people to surround yourself with who are complementary of your skills. So I'm a sort of crazy out there networker, designer, and my partner Justin is a very level-headed operations person. So it all works out. That's a little bit about me.
Well, thank you so much. And you kind of breezed through the part about getting the PhD in organic chemistry, but that I know you had talked about how you were inspired by a science teacher, but then she kind of discouraged you from pursuing it. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you won her over?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, like many people, I had a great teacher of chemistry in high school, and she was just infectious with her love for the knowledge and appreciation for teaching it and imparting it to other people. And I thought after that class that I wanted to teach chemistry. And she made me look at chemistry as something beyond a prerequisite that I had to get through when I got to college. She would often tell the class, chemistry is amazing. You live it, you breathe it. We eat and drink chemistry every day. Like, this is, think about it, fall in love with it, you know, embrace it. And I would go to her alone and say, you know, I really do love chemistry. How do you think I should pursue this? Because it's definitely something I'm going to do. And she'd say, oh, chemistry is a visual science. You know, I just don't think it's practical for you to pursue further. I worry about you doing this for your career. And I thought, oh, I love this stuff too much. There's got to be something I can say to turn her mindset to the fact that I should be able to study chemistry as a blind person. And I thought of it, it was the second semester, I think the second week of the second semester. And I went to her classroom early in the morning, one day before school, when I knew she would be there. And I said, you know, I understand that you think chemistry might be too visual for me to study, but I've got to tell you that nobody can see atoms. And chemistry really is a cerebral science. And that turned her 180 degrees. She became a total ally after that.
That's such a great story, because it speaks to the tremendous skills you all have in communication. You know, when you're an entrepreneur, a lot is winning people over. And what a great example of really turning somebody who was worried about you into your biggest supporter. That's a great story. Maybe we could talk a little bit about how you chose the particular businesses you're pursuing now, and how much we all have to make a living and have practicalities like the mortgage or the rent and that sort of thing. How much, you know, how did you balance that with what you love? I know you're all doing things that you really love. Kathy, maybe, and we can just be kind of free floating, but I'm going to call on you because I know you and I have talked a lot about your desire to help women and your values and how you wanted your business to sync up with the values that you have in life.
Yeah, I just, if I may, Hobie, you said something, Gustav, you as well, that I think it's so critical for parents and people who are influential with disabled people, particularly when they're young, to not let the bar be set too low. And I've got to tell you, my mother was one tough woman, and she expected me to achieve things. I was an immigrant. She wanted me to celebrate this country. She wanted me to take advantage of things, and there was never a pity party. And I think that that's critical. And the other thing, Hobie, that you said was, you know, this teacher who you loved, you appear to adore, she was just, you know, discouraging you. And you just said, no, 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 no. This is what I want to do. And you did it. And it was like me when I decided to start my own business. Even my mother said, you're crazy, you know, it's not going to work. But I wanted to do it because I knew that I had worked for large corporations, and God bless large corporations. They help a lot of the economy, but I wanted to do something, number one, that I enjoy doing. Number two, that I could determine and articulate what my values were, and only hire people who subscribe to those values. And if they didn't, then they really couldn't be part of the team. I also felt, and I still do, that women do have a tough time because we are still the nurturers. We're still the caregivers. And I had women working for me who either had young children or had older parents. And, you know, it was a tough place to be in, but I gave them an environment in which they could be themselves, celebrate themselves. We could take into consideration any disability or challenges that they may have and not see that as a negative, but instead focus on those things that they did particularly well. So to answer your question directly, I was the primary breadwinner in my household. So therefore I couldn't just say, oh, I'm just going to go here and knit or something like that. So I purposely chose a business where I knew what I was doing. And that was marketing. I also, and I encourage everybody who wants to be an entrepreneur, you must do this. It's painful. It can be boring. You must write a business plan, because otherwise, you know, how are you going to know if you're going to be able to put food on the table? So I did do a business plan. And of course, as a marketing person, very optimistic. And then somebody said to me, you know, you better increase those expenses by about 30% because it's not going to happen that way. And so I chose marketing because I knew marketing. I was frankly good at marketing. I also chose it because I was looking for a business that had a low cost of entry, because it's very difficult for small businesses and particularly women to get funding of any type. And I started my business many years ago. There are alternative ways of getting financing now, but it's still not easy. And I also factored in the fact that I knew a lot of people in that industry. So it would be easy for me to staff and really get out of the gate very quickly. So those were the considerations that I had when I started my business, and it worked for me.
It did. Because yeah. I felt like your business chose you in a way, because he had shared with me a great story of how his parents had really encouraged him to get a higher education, go to law school, in part to be able to pay for any medical costs that might come up over the years. And you went to law school, but I think you said you were allergic to law school.
I was profoundly allergic to law school.
And you love movies and audio and video, but you didn't just kind of jump right in without researching it or anything. Tell us a little bit about the process of choosing entrepreneurship after investing so much time in your education.
Yeah. It's a complex story and complex processes. So we definitely, I felt like this business did choose me in the sense that I was always very motivated and inspired by artists, you know, musicians. I had a really good friend growing up who taught me how to listen and appreciate music. And some of my most difficult moments, music has gotten me through it, or a movie has changed the story that I tell myself. So I never quite had the courage, ironically, to go into Hollywood and try to become, you know, a director or a producer or whatever, that a writer. And so I felt like the way I could honor those artists and that form of art was to recreate a beautiful environment in the home where you could appreciate music or art and let it influence and change you the way it changed me. So me and my brother both shared that passion, and it made a lot of sense. We did do a lot of research, but the advice that I would give to people that we underestimated in the beginning was relationships and connections matter so much more than you think they do. If you're interested in a space or you think you have a solution to a problem, go out, start a meetup group, join a meetup group, go out on LinkedIn, do your research and start to make connections with those communities of people. And you're going to find so many more doors opening up for you and so many more possibilities. You may change or shift or pivot into something much better than you even imagined. I wish that I had done more of that, me and my brother, before we took the leap into the business.
I think you had told me that when you had had an opportunity to bid on an NFL player's home, the theaters, by the way, they're these really elaborate home theaters and these big mansions in Florida. And the builder, I think it was a builder who had introduced you to the opportunity, held a barbecue to celebrate the deal, and how that had been influential and kind of giving his seal of approval to your work and then led to other work. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I had met the builder at a networking event about a year prior and had stayed in touch with the builder. And the builder gave us the opportunity to meet with the client and bid on the job. And I think there were, goodness, 9 other companies bidding on the job. And we got along really well with the client. We developed a trust right away, and it was a process. And that experience opened up so many other doors for us afterwards. And yes, the barbecue was, the client had the barbecue after the job was done to celebrate the people who did a great job that he wanted to stay friends with. You know, like, we still have lunch, we still get together and talk. It's really, for us, the client is more like a long-term relationship. It's an investment in the people, the family, to become almost like a trusted advisor for them. So that relationship building, again, is just, it opens up so many possibilities and really creates a virtuous circle for everybody.
Oh, absolutely. And I know Hobie was kind of drafted into one part of his business by Francis Ford Coppola. And I didn't put this in the article, but I was wondering, how did he know about you? He was running the wine tastings at Coppola's winery about 2 hours from UC Davis, where he was getting his PhD, or maybe you were in grad school at that point.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'll get to that in just a minute. It's a fun story. I actually got brought into my business that I love far before that, but I didn't realize how much it was preparing me for what would become my business future. First of all, I just want to say that, you know, what I think I've heard listening to Kathy and Gustavo's sort of reasons why, if you will, is that we're doing what we do because we love it. They do what they do. Kathy started her business because she had a great passion and still probably does have a great passion for marketing and for valuing women in business. Gustavo started a business in the film and music industry because he wanted to allow other people to have some of the same experiences, life-changing experiences that he's had with those things. And for me, I'll tell you a little bit about how I got started where I am, but I love it. No day feels like work. And I know that if you're going to be a successful entrepreneur, number one, you need to have a plan. And Kathy couldn't be more correct about that. But number two, and just as important as the plan, you have to love what you're doing. Because if we don't love what we're doing, it feels like work. And entrepreneurship is hard, okay? It's a grind. There are days when we feel like, how am I gonna make it work? How am I gonna make it work next week, next month? You know, I'm tired. And I think that feeling is very common. But if you do something that you really love, and it becomes what I call a labor of love, all those dreadful feelings become minimized and you're able to just fly and flourish in what you love. So when I was 10 years old, my parents gave me for Christmas, a 10 and a half gallon soup pot. And the goal of this soup pot was one of my chores. It was called a chore, but it ended up being one of my favorite things to do, was to cook soups and stews for them to freeze and take to work for lunch. So they didn't have to eat out. They didn't like the unhealthy aspect of eating out and they wanted delicious food. And it was then that I really began playing with different flavor combinations and understanding what went well together. And as I like to say, I'll spare you the details of my nerdiness when it comes to food, but I really like to think of flavor, whether it's in the food or drink world, as a language. And unique flavors caused by unique spices, unique ingredients, whatever they may be, are just vocabulary words in that language. So it was then that I really started speaking that language of flavor and aroma. And I became so in tune when I would smell things in my surroundings and they would remind me of something I'd cooked or some ingredient that I have in my kitchen or used in my kitchen. And I was able to learn about the world in a, so being totally blind, color really doesn't mean much to me, but I was able to develop a richness for the world in terms of aromatics and smell and taste, and really use that as my canvas as an artist. So flash forward, after making these soups throughout my upbringing, I end up at college and I did all the cooking in college for myself and my roommates. And I actually did all the shopping as well, independently. We lived fairly close to a supermarket and I did all the shopping and prepared the meals and did the cooking, and everyone was happy about that. I was happy about that because it kept this passion of mine going. And then in 2011, someone who I know and very deeply appreciate, a man by the name of Chris Downey, who's an architect, lost his sight in 2008. I was able to mentor him a little bit in 2009 when we met, after we met at a science camp that we were both mentors at. And Chris had done some architectural work for Mr. Coppola and said, Hobie, you know, Coppola wants to start doing a truly blindfolded wine tasting at his winery. And you might want to meet him. So he made an introduction. And when Francis Ford Coppola calls and says, hey, I need you to do this for me, you kind of say, yep, I'll do it. And then hang up and realize, what did I just agree to? But that experience was really life-changing, building this, what I call tasting in the dark, and really being the person and the mind behind it. We created an experience that highlighted wine and did not focus on the fact that people were blindfolded and having them eat complicated dishes. And, you know, it wasn't gimmicky, right? And that's the way I lead these experiences a lot to this day with all sorts of other ingredients around the world. And it's never about gimmick. It's never about, oh, let's have fun and see what we can taste under blindfold. What we do is we just use the temporary lack of eyesight to show people how they might be able to absorb more from the world around them when they're not distracted. And I do think of eyesight as a distraction when they're not distracted by it. This experience got me really involved in the food and beverage world. And as I was finishing up my PhD, I had the honor of teaching several chemistry classes while in graduate school and realized that I had to make my lectures a lot less accessible to me in order to make them accessible to my students who didn't want to speak chemistry. They wanted to, you know, see chemistry in terms of videos and little arrows pointing every which way. So I decided that I love flavor. I love this world of sensory that I speak very well. And I know organic chemistry now. Why don't I start doing some really exciting product development work from a sensory perspective and a reformulation perspective, and just got into that level of consulting. And it was actually on a few projects early out of graduate school where I was coaching various clients of high-end creative agencies in some of the experiences that I talked about, and had the opportunity to collaborate very, very closely with several agency partners, and realized that I love being creative and I love explaining things in a compelling way and telling stories. And that prompted us to start SensePoint. Which is really exciting for me. We are a few years in the running with both, and I love what I do, and that's why it's possible. And I think that's, if you hear nothing else from me today, it's that you gotta love what you do, because that's what empowers you to take the challenges and take the next step and live life and honestly love life as an entrepreneur.
So much food for thought here. Well, what brought us here today together is our discussion about entrepreneurship and disabilities. And we've touched on this, but I was hoping we could dive into this a little bit more. How did having disabilities influence your career paths? And we talked actually probably more about opportunities than challenges in our pre-interviews, but I'm interested in both the opportunities and challenges that they brought to your current businesses. Who wants to go first?
Yeah, I'll start with that. I find that a really interesting question because I, like all of our panelists, had a disability from a very young age. I was 5 when I contracted polio. And what it did for me was, as somebody who has a disability, you're always trying to figure out how to get around this. How do I negotiate those stairs? How do I, wait a minute, the elevator's down at the airport. What am I going to do with all this? So you're always looking for creative solutions to things. And although I don't think we're totally aware of it, that's what we do. We do it every day. So therefore, I believed, and of course I hate generalities, but most people who have disabilities are pretty creative. They're problem solvers because we don't have any choice. We've got to figure it out. I believe for many years was one of those people who said, I don't define myself by my disability. I don't define myself that way. I'm more than that. I'm creative. I'm smart. I'm blah, 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 blah. And I think one day I woke up and Gustavo, to your point, it wasn't linear. It took, you're kind of zigzagging and you wake up one day and you say, oh my gosh, you do have a disability and maybe it's not defining you, but it certainly is a part of you. And I felt that I needed to embrace it more than I did. And I think that was a turning point for me. That, and when I worked for large corporations, and I frankly don't think this happened because they were mean-spirited, I saw how people with disabilities were treated, and they were treated differently. And I didn't really like that because I saw such talent. For example, the Department of Labor has a database of disabled people who are, if you look at that database, these people are brilliant. I mean, they're brilliant and they should all have jobs, but you know what? Some people are just very uncomfortable with people with disabilities. And that was one of the driving forces for me when I started my own business. I wanted to be in a position where I could hire people if they had a disability or they didn't have a disability, but really hire them for what they did well, hire them for their value system. Frankly, they weren't treated any differently. If they didn't do their job, that could be a real problem. So, I feel that it's important for those of us who have issues like disabilities, and issues is not the right word, to really look at it. I mean, for example, and I laugh about this a lot, I worked on a brand that was for tired, achy, swollen legs. And, somebody said to me, well, what do you know about running? Well, not very much because I really don't do a lot of running. But what I did was I sponsored the Boston Marathon. So I'm like, it doesn't have to be real running. You can do it in a different way. So I think we have to love what we do. We have to be accepting of people and just really measure them in terms of what they're delivering. I know this sounds very crass, but what are they delivering? And the other thing, Hobie, that you said, which really has played so much in my life, and I hadn't thought about it until you said it, you did somebody a favor who lost his sight and you mentored him, my words, perhaps not yours. And I can tell you the number of times that I've done a favor for somebody just because they asked me to, that has really transformed much of my life is quite amazing. So it's a long way of saying, accept who you are. You got to be you. Everybody else is taken. And you don't have to suppress it. And I know, having done it, that that can be a hard thing to do. And really look at people for who they are, not as disabled people. Even when I say, well, she's a woman business owner, that still bothers me. She's a successful business owner, but we somehow have to include that description. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, that's a very good answer. You touched on something, Kathy, that I think is important, which is the communication aspect of communicating about a disability, whether you choose to or not to in a business setting. And I know Gustavo and I talked a little bit about the podcast and how that helped to open the door to different conversations that deepened his relationships with clients and other stakeholders in the business and in his community. Do you want to talk about that, like the communication choices you're making and how they evolved over time?
Yeah, absolutely. And I, Kathy, I love what you said about this authenticity of finding the people who match your values and they're still diverse. You know, they could be from diverse backgrounds, diverse everything else, but they're bringing that same value system to the work that you're doing together. That's imperative and it's huge. I try to do the same thing. I think that sometimes if you look at disability as a lens, sometimes it's very, very important in your life. And sometimes it's like, it's almost not even there. It just depends on context. It depends where you are, what you're doing. So many clients, maybe they think it's impolite to talk about it. They're uncomfortable with it, or it just doesn't matter. You just don't know with people. But what the podcast has really helped me do is to speak about it openly in public. It's a public forum. Everybody can listen to it. And so that gave me an extra level of comfort where if I saw an opportunity where maybe somebody wanted to ask a question, you know, you can kind of see it the way they look at you, the way they talk, or the way they kind of may mention something here and there, they'll throw out little hints. To me, it became an invitation to see, okay, let me meet this person where they're at and see how I can help them maybe shift the narrative around what they're thinking a little bit. Some people, so a lot of our clients are very successful entrepreneurs. They like to hear the story of, I didn't let my disability stop me from doing the things that I wanted to do. Sometimes that message is very inappropriate depending upon who you're talking to. But if you're meeting people where they are, you have the ability to move them into another direction and into other narratives and stories around disability that helps.
And Hobie, you've talked a lot about a concept that came up pretty much in everybody's comments, which is the idea of the problem-solving skills that people with disabilities have because of the challenges of sometimes navigating a flight of stairs or other barriers. And it almost seemed like a selling point in terms of, you know, why should they hire you as a consultant? And your different way of thinking about things. Could you talk a little bit about that, how it makes you think?
Well, absolutely.
How you communicate that?
No, absolutely. I would love to share some thoughts on that. But first, I really want to harken back to the question of, you know, how has disability in business as entrepreneurs put challenges up and put barriers up? And what opportunities has it given you? Has it afforded you? I think the problem solving is an opportunity, but I want to start with the challenges. You know, as Kathy said, there's so often times where we see people with disabilities with extreme talents be either not given jobs or put into a job that doesn't take full advantage of their talent, because people are worried about how am I going to interact with this person with a disability? What are the HR issues with hiring someone with a disability? What sort of accommodations are they going to request? And is this really going to be a good relationship for us or just a hassle? So one of the challenges is that we, in order to, and I think this is a great, this leads to opportunity, but in order to be considered for jobs or as entrepreneurs where we're doing our own job, in order to be considered, you know, useful and the one that gets the bid and the one that gets hired, is we have to work harder than our non-disabled peers. And we honestly have to be better than them. And when I say better, it could sound controversial, but we have to be more capable than them of performing whatever job it is that we're taking. Because, you know, this world that we live in, whether we, you know, like it or not, is a world where we're all in a capitalistic society on an equal playing field. And in order to get the work and get our piece of the pie, especially as we need to pay rent and keep food on our tables, we need to be better at a lot of what we do than other people. So that's a challenge there. And I don't usually talk about this, but I feel like this is a forum that, that warrants it. As I was finishing up with graduate school, I was applying for a lot of jobs. I applied for, well, I shouldn't say a lot, a handful of jobs that I would have been interested in taking, working for some large food companies in the world. And my premise there was really that I loved marketing and I was a scientist and I had a really good palate that I developed over the past, you know, couple of decades. And I would be excellent at, you know, really working with R&D teams and then taking what we do in R&D and translating it to sales and marketing teams. And everyone said that I was either qualified or overqualified, but I didn't get any of those jobs. And an HR, not an HR person, one of the people at one of the companies confided in me and said, I got to tell you, you're overqualified, but HR is terrified of hiring a blind person and what that's going to cause for the company. And when I heard that, I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And my attitude was, hey, if I can't sit at the table, I'm going to build my own table. You know, and that's just what we need to do as entrepreneurs. And I also realized very quickly that problem solving, and this is getting back to Elaine's more specific question, problem solving is something that we do all the time as people with disabilities, whether we like it or not. How am I going to make this document accessible to me? How am I going to find my way from where I'm sitting now in an Airbnb in Chicago following the conference I was just at to the airport? You know, how am I going to make these things happen? And it's just a little bit, it's not hard, but it takes some problem solving and it takes some forethought. We're always, and my point here is that we're always solving sometimes really little problems, but they're problems nonetheless, as folks with disabilities, you know, if we want to be successful. And what are we doing in business? We're identifying a problem. So Kathy identified a problem really well. A lot of people aren't that good at marketing. She is good at marketing and she offered those services to her clients and they became more successful. So she was solving a problem. In the food industry, I use my palate. I use my skills that other people do not have, right? And I am able to solve problems that no one else is able to solve. The cases when I get involved, the product development cases are very challenging. And I just love that because I'm literally able to observe things. I do use the word see things in a light that other people don't see them. Gustavo is solving a problem. You know, if you look at people who are building homes or remodeling a home, if you like music, you want to listen to it on a good sound system. You want to have a really good set of equipment beautifully professionally installed in order to do that. They don't know how to do that, but Gustavo certainly does and solves that problem for them. So, and that's just, those are a few examples just from amongst our group, but really any business is designed to solve a problem. And if you don't solve a problem, you shouldn't be in business. That's the bottom line. So I feel like I'm able to take my way of thinking about problems and solution and bring that same process that I've used, I think fairly successfully for my whole life, for my survival as a blind guy, and really pulled it into business. The other thing that I think all of us share on this call is that we take something that people would consider a disadvantage, a disability, and we figured out how to turn them into game-changing advantages in our careers. And as an example, I said, wait a minute, I know food and flavor better than most people because it's a language that I speak and I'm not distracted by my eyesight. Let me offer those skills, which I have in my toolbox, to people who maybe don't have those. So the more that you can, and this is true for anyone who's able-bodied or whatever, this is true for any entrepreneur or anyone just in life. If you can look at your life and think about things in your traits about you, you might think of as disadvantages, and then use those to springboard your mind with an abundance mindset into advantages that are going to get you to the next level.
I was about to ask you about the mindset, because so much of life is how we frame things. And every time I've spoken to you, I feel like I've revised the way of viewing a challenge, or it seems like you have a very unique way of framing things in your mind, and each of you does. Is that something that comes naturally, or is it something that you actively work at?
For me, I just love challenges. I love seeing something that's, and it's not a competitive thing. I'm not like I don't like, winning. It's not, I don't need to win. Okay. But I like challenging myself. I guess I do compete against myself. And saying, what can you do? Really, is this possible? And I just think that so many things that people say, oh no, I can't do that. I'm not a tile installer. I can't make my shower look good. Well, if you tried it, you might be really impressed with what you can do. And that was just a silly example that popped into my head. I don't know why I'm talking about installing tile, but it's just the example that came to me. Believe in yourself and have an open mindset. And that harkens back to our conversation about expectations. Never lower the bar for anyone around you or for yourself. And I think you'll be pretty impressed with what you can do.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Kathy.
I'd like to just, if I may, add pretty quickly two things to what Hobie said. First of all, I love to solve problems. And, sometimes I think I'm just a really nosy person. So if I can figure it out, I just get such joy out of solving problems. But I wanted to share a story with all of you. And it just came to mind as Hobie was talking. I was, I got a call one day from somebody and they said, oh, wow, we've heard about you and we would love to interview you. And I met you the other day. I don't think you remember me, but will you come in and interview with me? Sure, my company. So I got there at 7 o'clock in the morning. They didn't offer me a glass of water. And at 4:30 was the last interview. By this time, I am hungry and tired. And so I went in and this young woman closed the door and she said to me, what are you doing here? And I'm like, interviewing for a job. And she said, do you really think that, I'm not going to mention who the CEO is, would hire a disabled woman of childbearing age, woman? I still to this day, when I think about it, I'm so shocked. And I think she really did think she was doing me a favor, which I think she probably was. But I wish that had happened at 8 o'clock in the morning rather than 4:30 in the afternoon. So my point is, these people were pursuing me. And I was then told that they would never hire anybody who was me. So it can be tough. But I believe that my trick is, in marketing, we call it winking at the brand. And that means it's just really kind of cool. And we've got to be kind of cool. We've got to, or at least I do. I just love what I do. I love solving problems for clients. I'm good at it. I love hiring people that I can give them balance in life. But I can still give them a stimulating work environment. So I think, again, it gets back to who we are and what really excites us. And, back to, as we were talking about, it's very tiring being an entrepreneur. And I used to joke, I can pick whatever 22 hours in the day I want to work. It's very flexible, but it's tiring. I don't know about the guys on the panel, but women tend to personalize it. Oh, you know, I didn't get hired because I didn't have the right lipstick on. I mean, you know, all this silliness. But when you're tired, everything becomes more difficult. So you've got to believe in yourself. And all those naysayers, those people who tell me I couldn't do job sharing, I couldn't be successful in a business, you know, I just put my blinders on because I wanted to be. I knew I could do it. So go for it and do it.
That's great advice. And what kind of interests me is you've each in your own way talked about having to build your own table, and yet you're collaborating with others constantly. And that's that's kind of a high wire act in business. And I guess it's true for every entrepreneur seems to have a reason to build their own table, right? It might not be a disability. It might be something entirely different. But you can't exist in a vacuum. Even though I write about one person businesses, what always amazes me is how many people are involved in those one person businesses.
Right.
It's like a cast of 1,000 sometimes. And, there's a lot of nuance and sophistication to what you're doing day to day, which might be why it's so tiring. I wondered, you've given some great advice to people who are thinking of starting a business while living with disabilities, but we didn't really dive into that fully. And I don't know, maybe Gustavo, do you want to start with that one? What would you tell someone who is listening to this and thinking, you know, despite all the obstacles, I still want to do this. And what could I do to be successful at it?
So I love what Hobie and Kathy have been saying. And I'm going to go back to the theme of choosing yourself. I was always very motivated, even as a young child, when somebody challenged me and said, you can't do this. You can't beat me at this video game. You can't do this thing. It was really, really, really motivational because I wanted to, I guess part of it was I had that belief and fight in myself, and that developed over time where I said, I want to participate in this world. I can contribute. I can do something. As that evolved, I was able to see the potential in other people because so many of us, just whether we have a disability or not, are not given opportunities. Life is hard, right? It's whether it's intentional or not, it just is. And if you're able to find like those hidden gems, those people, and give them a chance and meet them where they're at, it's amazing what they can do. That's why. So if you are going to start a business, my advice for you is work on your awareness, work on your self-belief, work on your why. Why do you want to do this? And then shift to what problems am I solving? And then start reaching out to the people in those communities to figure out if the problem is really, if you really have the right problem or if you need to adapt it. Once those relationships and those conversations start, maybe you find your business partner, maybe you find your mentor, maybe you find people who are going to help you on that journey and accelerate it. There's no one path. There's no one, you know, Here's the keys to the puzzle. And if we all do this, we're all going to get there. It's a shifting landscape, and you have to be able to keep adapting. But I think the more people that you come into contact with and develop relationships with, the easier that path becomes.
No, I might just tag onto that, Gustavo. This is Hobie, by the way. I think that what I would tell any employer about hiring people with disabilities is, number one, make sure they're right for the job. Really important to me not to hire people just because they have a disability and we want someone disabled in the role. That's a really bad reason to bring on someone with a disability. They've got to be, first and foremost, you know, like I think of myself as a hardworking entrepreneur who happens to be blind. And I like to think of myself as a lot more than my blindness, right? So I think it's really important. I know it's really important that we first and foremost make sure the person is right for the job. And my thought about bringing people to the workplace that have disabilities is just a corollary to what I've been saying for my entire career thus far about diversity and inclusion, but in particular here, diversity. I feel like if we bring a diverse group of people to the table, problems are going to get solved. And back to this problem solving trend here, with more eclectic and more well thought out, or more thoroughly thought out, maybe I should say, solutions, right? So it's going to be that much easier to solve a problem when you have different opinions, maybe someone with a couple of people with different disabilities and different ways of focusing on the world and understanding the world, maybe someone from a different socioeconomic background than others. But I'll tell you, if you have a room of a dozen able-bodied, white, middle-aged males solving a problem, you're going to get a very one-dimensional solution compared to if you bring on a more diverse workforce. And I really think that diversity in business increases the bottom line and increases the opportunity of that business to really excel and move forward. And on the line of a network and connections, Gustavo has said some really beautiful things about the power of a big network and the power of knowing who to connect to whom, when. And I would say that I offer my clients a lot of business expertise, but probably the thing I offer my clients the most, which makes me, you know, which really, really helps them the most, is when I thoughtfully connect them to the right people. I have a knack for knowing when two people from my network who might be very, very different need to know each other. And it's just so much fun for me. I get so much joy out of watching connections I make flourish and seeing people just excel. And, you know, when you introduce two people, they become, if the connection goes well, it can happen where they become just this amazing force of nature that's, you know, when you put them together and their minds together, they're so much more powerful than working as individuals. And it tickles me to make connections and see them flourish.
This is really great advice. I'm mindful that we're at the hour and we have some time for Q&A. And one of the things I love about Helena Escalante is she always gathers the audience questions ahead of time. Thank you, Helena. There's some really good ones here. And these are in the area of advice to people that want to start businesses. I don't know if these are areas that you can address, but I'll just throw them out there and maybe somebody will have some thoughts on these. One person asks if we could please speak on mental disability. Another asked about chronic anxiety and being worried about putting themselves out there full time. I know, Kathy, you did a job share, but the issue of social anxiety, mental disabilities, we didn't really touch on that. And maybe in the disability community, you've spoken with folks that have given you insights. Anyone want to tackle that?
I've spoken to people who have had some of those, they're dealing with those constraints. And I think it's important as a business owner to create a safe space for your team where they feel like they can be very open about what they're going through and about what's happening in their lives and what they need to flourish and succeed. If you can't have that open conversation with people, I think you're doing it wrong. You're missing out on so much opportunity. So for me, I really try to focus in on our work environment is a very, very safe space. And if you're a talented human being and we want to work together, let's figure that out. I don't have all the answers. I don't know what everybody's going through, but let's figure that out together and see what works for you. If it's working virtually on a project, let's do that. You know, let's be flexible. Let's problem solve together and work on the solution. But don't tell yourself the story that because you have something, you can't do it. Or because you have something, you have to stop at the problem. Keep going, you know, find the people who are willing to open up those doors for you and make it work together. It's possible.
That's one of the things that I would add to that, Gustavo, is have a support system. None of us, we would be absolutely lying if we said that we've been able to do this completely autonomously with no support system. And that's not just people with disabilities, right? That's everybody. I've surrounded myself with people I trust, I love, and I respect, and who will always support me. And I'll support them right back just as much in return. But it's so wonderful to build that support network, that group of people around you who can help you succeed and who can not only act as motivators, but be that shoulder you can cry on, be that person you can come home and, or that group of people you can come home and talk to after a really hard day, and who are just going to never stop believing in you. That's the support I'm talking about. And I think with anxiety, I'm human myself, and I go through patches of depression for sure. And not just going to say that. And I think that when we feel like it's hard to get up and do what we need to do, we just have to remember it's always worked out. You know, you've been alive this long, putting one foot in front of the other. Let's just keep at it. You know, it's that keep on trucking sort of motto that I think is so important with running your own business and just doing life in general, whether you have a disability or not.
Yeah, and I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach. I do absolutely believe one has to have a support system, but one also has to be willing to talk about it, to share it. And some people are so embarrassed by these things that they don't want to talk about it. So I think anybody who experiences those types of things has to take responsibility, has to not be embarrassed or ashamed that they're experiencing whatever that is. And I also think sometimes we've got to give ourselves a break and maybe say, all right, you know what, for 5 minutes, I am going to have a major pity party. I'm just going to really feel badly about myself and awful. And then you put the timer on, and when the 5 minute timer, you're done. And then you pick up the phone or text, whatever way you communicate to those support people, and just share with them how you're feeling.
And Kathy, you worked out arrangements where you were working in a job share, and there's a few questions on the spreadsheet from people who have conditions that might flare up, like autoimmune disease, where they need to communicate with an employer. And if they had Gustavo as an employer, they wouldn't have to worry about it. But Hobie and you have both shared situations where the employer was not sensitive, and you would never feel comfortable in that environment really having the conversation. I wondered, you know, what does a successful approach look like when, in your experience, when you're bringing it up to an employer that you do have a condition that might require some accommodations in a way that works for you as a person? You're telling what you want to tell, and that also results in what you want, which is getting the work or getting the job. It's again a very delicate and sophisticated balancing act, but I think that might be helpful for some of the people in the audience to hear. What does that sound like?
You know, so I have a very specific approach to this. I'll just quickly share. The relationship has to work. You know, the relationship really, it's like dating, if you think about it. You know, there's sometimes when you might sit down with someone that you're thinking about dating, and you're like, yeah, no, it may not be the right fit. And we need to do that as people with disabilities or as anyone seeking jobs. We have to make sure our employer is a good fit for us. And the other thing that I live by, my biggest motto in work and in everything I do, is don't litigate. There are plenty of people out there who might seem like they're being short, or like they just don't know what to. How do I deal with it? This person tells me they've got, you know, challenges that might flare up. What am I going to do about it? And if we have the heart of a teacher, we come in and we say, this is what I'm talking about. This is what might happen. And I know there are things that I don't know about you, but we're going to learn about each other, and we're going to find a balance that works so that we can. And that's how I convinced a chemistry department at a university, you know, when this blind guy comes and says, hey, I want to study chemistry and, you know, do experimental chemistry in the lab. They say, what? How does that, come on, come again. And we just have to slowly and calmly explain to them what we mean by that. And the relationship has to work, by the way. So that's why I said that first, because I knew when I started at UC Davis that the relationship would work, that they were open-minded enough to make it happen. And then once the relationship can work, we have to nurture it along by teaching and nurturing, and not by saying, this is what I need and this is how you're going to do it, because that's not approachable. Be approachable. Yeah.
I'm going to add to that. I think often so many of us want the job. We just want that job for whatever reason. And I go back to that situation where I was asked to come in and interview. I mean, they wanted me. And, you know, then all of a sudden, and frankly, the employer never said that was one of the employees. But I think we always have to ask ourselves the question, just like if we're dating or in a relationship, is this really something I want to get into? Because if you've got a boss that's just, and it doesn't have to be just about disabilities, it can be about being a mother, you know, having children, you know, being a single father. And, you know, their values, it gets back to the values are not the same as yours, then I don't really think you can have the conversation. But when you find, and I think most of us are pretty intuitive, we know, we or at least we're pretty sure, then it is appropriate. And I believe it should be full disclosure. And I think nobody should get into a relationship and not be authentic about it. You know, you get there, you get the job, they give you a huge signing bonus. I'm making all this up, obviously. And then you say, oh, you know, by the way, I, you know, have a couple of, you know, things that I'm dealing with. It's just not the way to start a relationship. So I think being authentic.
Can I just jump in real quick?
Of course.
I would love to encourage existing entrepreneurs and business owners to be less rigid. We all know the importance of structure, of productivity, of efficiency, all these things, but we're not machines. At least I don't believe human beings are machines. You know, if we're looking for somebody to check off, if their work involves checking off a list, you know, something that can be automated, I think there's something better for a human being to be able to do. And I would encourage people to say, look, let's think of the work more flexibly. There's deadlines, there's things that need to be met, but can the project be done with more flexible hours? And what value is this person really bringing to the table, to the organization, than nobody else is? Because maybe they see things differently, they think about the world differently, they have a unique perspective. Don't undervalue those things and give up on that person because it doesn't fit a rigid box that you want to put everybody into. You're missing out on so many opportunities by doing that.
Gustavo, I'm just going to add to that, if I may. When I did job sharing, people said, oh, you know, they must be lazy people. I got to tell you, they work 2.5 days a week. Their job share partner came in, worked 2.5 days a week. They never really left the job. They were so committed. They were so thankful to have the flexibility. They were so thankful to, you know, come in at this time with blue jeans on when nobody did that. And so therefore, I think your point about being rigid is well taken. People, when they are well taken care of, respected, and recognized, will go beyond. And I think a lot of people just don't realize that. A lot of employers.
And it goes back to something we talked about just earlier in the conversation, which is that I think you'll be totally surprised 90%+ of the time, the dividends that giving people a chance mm-hmm. pay off. If they're good people, if they're not going to work hard and they're just going to be lackadaisical, it's different. But if someone is a good, dedicated person, showing them, doing a good deed for them, like my friend who introduced me to Francis Ford Coppola after I helped him a little bit, like these are the things that pay off in spades when we give people a chance.
I would imagine in the current labor market, employers are taking more creative solutions, but are you finding that or no? Has it not changed at all?
I'm not finding it.
She's shaking her head. So well, there's an opportunity, right? Like for somebody to help them tap mm-hmm. into all the people that are starting their own businesses because it's so frustrating. there's a question that just came in. Did any of you have any disabled persons as role models? That's an interesting question.
I've had both disabled and non-disabled role models for sure. One of the most important things for me is choosing our mentors and having a good base of mentors. And I've had all sorts of mentors throughout my life, but I just, this value, this ability of people to see what a future for us before we see it for ourselves is such a huge opportunity. And if you aren't yet a mentor, I encourage you to become a mentor to someone. Find someone to take under your wing because it feels so good. And none of us are too old or too wise to have mentors. And those are the role models. And yes, I've had plenty of disabled and non-disabled role models.
You know, I'm going to also add to the mentorship. The thing about being a mentor, it's so amazingly fulfilling. However, it's amazing how much I learn being a mentor for my mentee. And so it truly is a two-way street. And I think it's a wonderful thing to do.
You know, one other question that came up in the spreadsheet was invisible disabilities. There are a lot of disabilities that aren't evident to other people, but might require some accommodations or just be something an employer would need to know about you. Maybe it has to do with the hours that you need to work or whatever it is. Any thoughts on how to bring it up or when not to? Because we talked in our first conversation about how in some situations the disability is a factor and in others it really isn't. You know, it's kind of in the background. And so people, I don't want to be defined by any one thing in their personality or their body or anything else. So how do you find that perfect way to do this, if there is a perfect way? I see Kathy smiling. She's like, God, there's no perfect way.
Yeah, and it's repetitive. It gets back to that relationship. I mean, there is no way that group that had asked to interview me would ever have been accepting. I mean, it just wasn't in their DNA. And although my disability is obvious, I can't even imagine somebody who had a sort of one that's not a disability that's not obvious having that conversation in an environment like that. But if they went to Hobie or Gustavo, then you know what, it would be like a really easy conversation to have. So I think Gustavo, you used this term earlier, it's not a plug and play. Not one thing works for everybody. I think you have to be intuitive about the people that you're talking with.
I agree with that. And invisible disabilities, so the people that I've spoken to on the podcast who have had invisible disabilities usually say, again, it comes down to a personal decision of, do I trust this employer to tell them or not? So there's not really a clear answer there. It's what Kathy said. It's partially intuitive, knowing where you work, knowing the people that you work with, and do you feel open and comfortable enough to talk about that? Obviously, I encourage that. Kathy does, Hobie does. There's other companies that do too. A great strategy, I think, is to go on LinkedIn, find the people who work for those companies that you're interested in, reach out to them, just ask for advice. Can I get 5 minutes of your time? I'm interested in working here or in this industry. What's your experience been with this? How comfortable are they? How open are they? What's the culture really like? I think most people would be willing to give you honest advice about that.
I think that's true, Gustavo. I really like what you had to say there. I also think that if you're going to be establishing a work relationship, I love the fact that my disability is visible because it makes it very easy. If I walked in, and I know a lot of partially sighted people, actually, who choose not to use their white cane and or a dog guide. And then that's fine. You can look sighted until you start running into stuff. And then you don't look blind, you just look silly, right? And we don't want that. And I think the same thing goes with even intellectual disabilities, is that if it's going to affect our ability maybe to carry out whatever it is we're doing professionally, I think it's good that people know so that it's not, it doesn't look like, gosh, this person is just incompetent, so that there's a level of understanding there is really an important thing to bring together. And it's good, ideally, I know this isn't the case in every situation, but in a perfect world, you will forge a bond with your, you know, if it's a good employer, you'll forge a bond with them where you feel okay about sharing that stuff.
We're getting to our last 2 minutes. So if anyone has a last minute question, now's the time to shoot it in. I have so appreciated this discussion because you've all been so candid, and I feel like people will come away from this with actionable things that they can do in their own career and great strategies for navigating a world that's very complex. You know, the working world is changing very fast right now, and having disabilities makes it even more complex at times. And you've really given great advice, and each brought your own unique spin to this whole topic. Do you each want to say a couple of parting words before we sign off?
I would, because I always have something to say. I just want to encourage everybody to really embrace who they are and celebrate who they are. And if you have a dream, go for it, because you know what? It's just, you're not going to get to second with your foot on first.
I think I speak for the group, but I'll speak for myself here and say, have a good work ethic, but believe in yourself. It's the most important thing, and have an open and abundance mindset. And by all means, reach out to me anytime I can be of assistance. Reach out on LinkedIn, reach out on my website, hobiewedler.com. Don't be a stranger. And if there's any way that I can help you, get in touch with me, please. Thank you so much to Helena Escalante for putting this together, and to Elaine Pafel for the moderating the panel. And I also want to just say a personal thanks to Gustavo for bringing me these wonderful connections to all these fine folks, because if it weren't for being on his podcast, I wouldn't be here right now. So thank you.
I would like to
I'll just immense gratitude to everybody on this panel. I love you all. You're all fantastic human beings. Looking forward to what we all do next. But my parting thought, the stories you tell yourself shape your realities and the possibilities and the limitations that you may think you have. Don't give the gatekeepers or other people or the problems more power than they already have by believing in something that's not true. Empower yourself, find a better story, find another way. Don't stop at the problem.
Helena, you're going to have the recording somewhere, right? I want to write all this down.
Absolutely. I have been myself writing down all these gold nuggets. This has been fantastic. Elaine, thank you so, so much. Hobie, Gustavo, Kathy, you have been so fantastic. I wish we could just continue the rest of the afternoon and probably into tomorrow having this conversation. This has been absolutely fantastic, but unfortunately our time has come to an end. We will definitely have to do an encore of this, because just look at all the comments in the chat. Everybody is loving this, and throughout we've been getting wonderful comments as well. So everyone will have a recording of this, but one more thing that I just want to say, a couple of notes, let's say practical notes that I took as to how the library can help you become an entrepreneur or grow your business if you already have one. If you don't have a business plan, please sign up. Our wonderful business librarians can help you with tons of resources. And the library has a business plan competition that happens on a yearly basis. We're wrapping up this year's, but the next one will start in the fall. But in the meantime, don't wait. You can definitely get started. And we have also great programming week after week that we put together to keep that entrepreneurial mind going. And because, as you learned today, mindset is so incredibly important, I want to invite you to please come next Monday. I'm going to ask my team to please drop the link in the chat, because we have a fantastic program with a mindset and leadership coach. He is one of the best. His name is Mike Goldman, and he is fantastic. And he's going to teach you how to focus, how to reframe your mind to achieve that business, entrepreneurial, and personal success that you want. Also, if you are looking for business mentors, the library has a list of different groups that can provide business advice. So I'm going to ask the team also to drop the link in the chat for the for a consultation with our business librarians, who can then help you and point you to the appropriate group. If you are in fintech, or if you are in something else, or edtech, or if you are, you know, whatever it is that you want, I'm sure that there is a group that can help you. And our advisors, our librarians, can definitely point you to those advisors. So having said that, the last thing that I have to ask you is to please take 2 minutes of your time and give us feedback. The link will be on the chat. It's a form that takes seriously no more than 2 minutes, but we really care about your feedback. And lastly, with all my heart, thank you to every single one of you who stayed with us until now, and to every single one in here who made this possible. So thank you, thank you, thank you again, and have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, Hobie. Thank you, Gustavo. Thank you, Kathy. Have a wonderful afternoon, and thank you, everyone. Thank you to my team as well, very much as always. Have a great one.